This is Audible.
Odeon Publishing presents Liar King, Tower of Babel, Book 2, written by Adam Elliott, performed by Vikas Adam. Prologue. The job had seemed off to him from the start. The broker was offering too much zenny for such a simple task. It gave Reinhardt flashbacks of every Mr. Johnson that had ever backstabbed him in Shadowrun, and he'd told Dolph as much. Their brave leader hadn't listened. They were being paid 2/3 in advance, he'd argued, so it wouldn't make sense for the quest broker to pull the rug out from under them. Some Elon just had more zenny than sense. If they didn't take the quest, someone else would. From the way Dolph's screams echoed down the hallway, Reinhardt was fairly sure Dolph now wished that someone else had. On its face, it had been a simple task. Visit an out-of-the-way dungeon and use a key provided by their employer to enter a secret chamber. Once there, they could scoop up whatever loot they could find, so long as they located a particular spell component in the process. Jobs like this were their bread and butter, just never for so much money. And never on such a short time frame. Why they'd been asked to make the run that very evening was one of the many questions Reinhardt planned to ask, preferably at knife point, once he found his way out of this hellhole. If he found his way out. Reinhardt didn't even know what went wrong. One second they were rampaging through the secret chamber, snatching up nearly everything that wasn't nailed down and wishing they'd brought a crowbar for the things that were. The next, Dolph was sprinting for the exit, and four of the stone statues that ringed the chamber had burst free of the walls, the blades of their weapons gleaming metal as they attacked. The statues were so ubiquitous in the complex that Reinhardt hadn't cast them a second glance when they'd first entered the chamber. They had impassive stone faces with oriental features, their weapons and armor derivative of a similar, though slightly more fantastical, heritage. Lifelike, but uncanny. Everything about them so perfect in its detail that he'd found himself uncomfortable just looking at them. There was a name for such statues, but it had proven frustratingly elusive up until the moment Nirvana had shouted it as the stone men advanced on her. Terracotta soldiers. Their cleric hadn't made it out of the room. Dolph was their tank, and without him, they had no way to manage the enemies properly. Reinhardt had taken a wicked slash across the right side during the retreat to the door, and Nirvana had drawn aggro from the entire group by healing him. The last he'd seen of her, she'd been stumbling away from the encroaching monsters, crying for help before growing silent as swords and spears pierced her. All sense of cohesion had vanished as they fled. His two allies had bolted ahead of him, trying to catch up to Dolph. Their haste had led them headlong into another group of soldiers, with predictable results. The level of the soldiers appeared to vary, as low as 10 or as high as 20, but considering that Dolph, at level 8, was their strongest, they didn't stand a chance. Discretion had been all that kept Reinhardt alive. He was a magical trickster, a class that mixed a small amount of spell-casting ability with traditional rogue skills. His vanish spell had allowed him to bypass wave after wave of the guards as they'd roamed the corridors, while his sneak skill had muffled his steps and hidden him in the shadows while his MP recharged. It might not be enough to save him, however. With each passing minute, the number of soldiers marching up and down the corridors continued to increase. Their heavy footsteps had long since replaced the skittering noises of the dungeon's usual low-level inhabitants, and before long, he suspected the only things living in the dungeon would be stone. Eventually, one of the soldiers would have a perception skill high enough, or have enough circumstantial modifiers to finally spot him. Once they did, it wouldn't be much of a fight.
"Where is it?"
The words reverberated through Reinhardt's body as though he were standing next to the bass speaker at a rock concert. The sound of them came from everywhere and nowhere, not an echo, but an omnipresent noise. It was as if the very walls themselves were speaking.
"I don't have it!"
That voice was more natural, and one he recognized. Reinhardt had been taking the shortest, safest route to the surface, and from the sound of his nearby voice, Dolph had apparently had a similar idea. It would have been better to double back, he knew, but even with his common sense screaming at him, Reinhardt couldn't fight the feeling of curiosity that filled him. Dolph had taken something before he fled. That much was clear now. It would be nice to leave with the knowledge of what and why, particularly when he went to have that talk with their employer. So instead of retreating, he advanced, creeping along the wall until he finally slid into the shadowed corner of a small stone room. The room had 6 occupants. Dolph was on his knees, each arm pinned up at shoulder level by the steady hands of a stone soldier. 2 more had the sharp edges of their pole arms pressed along the exposed flesh of the player's neck, preparing to execute him at a moment's notice. The final stone warrior was different than the others. For one thing, the bearded statue had color to his clothing. Stone meant to resemble vibrant purple and red silks was painted as such wherever it was revealed beneath the golden armor. His skin remained the same gray stone, but his hair was black as night, the topknot atop his head held in place by a golden leaf pin that shimmered in the room's dim torchlight.
"I know you do not have it," it replied, though its mouth didn't move to form the words.
They came from the walls, from his soldiers, from the very ground that they stood on. The booming authority of the soldier's voice filled him, and Reinhardt knew in that instant he would tell the construct anything it asked of him.
"You gave it to someone. Who?"
"I don't know," Dolph cried. "It was a man. My employer said to take the relic and give it to him, that was all."
Reinhardt shook his head. It hadn't been hard to put 2 and 2 together to figure out that Dolph had been the source of his misery, but it stung hearing the man say it. Dolph had always been more than his fair share of greedy, but this was so far beyond that. Considering how fast he'd run, Dolph must have known something was going to happen, even if he didn't know precisely what. He knew there was a risk, and he did it anyway, without telling them. If the constructs didn't kill him, Reinhardt was going to.
"And this man has left the tomb?"
"Yes, at least I think. I can help you find him, though. I can tell you about his employer. I can tell you everything. Just let me..."
Dolph's pleading was interrupted by the butt of a pole arm struck across his jaw. The one in charge hadn't given an order, but all 4 had worked in an uncanny unison to allow for the blow, then returned to their original positions just as quickly.
"Yes, you will tell us everything before you die," the leader said bleakly, ignoring Dolph's pleading screams, and instead turning its unblinking eyes to the ceiling. It stood in silence, as if collecting its thoughts before it spoke, though Reinhardt was certain it was no longer speaking to anyone in the room.
"Thief, what you have taken will be your death, and the death of your people. I allow you 1 hour to return it, or you and all your kind will face oblivion."
Chapter 1
"Left side! Many whelps! Handle it!"
Caden shouted with a combination of frustration and resigned bemusement as he absorbed the impact of another of Mecha Dragon's swiping robotic claws on his upraised shield. He'd known from the very beginning that nothing good could come from a pickup group with 2 random players, or pubbies, as they would be known in a traditional MMO. But he'd hoped against hope that maybe, just maybe, he could trust them to follow simple instructions. 5 minutes into the 10th floor boss fight, he'd be happy if he could just avoid getting them all killed. It reminded him of the allegory of the pub stove. A hot stove sits in the corner, bearing a brass plate with the brand name Pubbies riveted into its frame. Having touched the stove in the past and found it to be hot enough to burn your hand, and having witnessed others touching this stove in the past and also burning their hands, how do you choose to proceed? Caden had chosen to slam his face into it. Not that he'd had too much of a choice. Celia, Shifty, and himself had been powering their way through floor after floor in the aftermath of the incident with Immolatus. Their strong combination of classes had made short work of even-level quests and monsters, but as a three-man group, they'd been forced to avoid any content, such as dungeons, that had been designed with a full five-man party in mind. Unfortunately, that content included floor bosses. He'd accounted for them in his original routing for the game, of course. A bookmarked website kept track of which floor bosses were alive or dead on any given day, and provided an editable tracking sheet so that groups could avoid squabbling over who had next on any given boss. Ideally, this meant that all Caden had to do was keep an eye on the list, wait for another group to defeat the boss, then travel through to the next floor before it could respawn. That was the idea, anyway. The strategy had worked without a hitch for the first 9 floors, but a combination of bad timing and bad luck had stymied their efforts on the 10th. A group had been scheduled to fight the boss 3 days after their arrival, the perfect amount of time for Caden and company to grind their skills, levels, and quests before progressing to the next floor. Unfortunately, that group had failed in the attempt. Worse yet, for Caden anyways, was the complete emptiness of the upcoming schedule. They could wait 2 weeks for a group to clear the boss, or they could do it themselves. It wasn't a choice. None of them could stomach the idea of sitting around for 2 weeks waiting for some other group to maybe get it right. Which meant they needed 2 more party members. Which meant they needed puppies. Which gave them the Banes.
"Oh, for personal skill use! Taunt!" Caden shouted, following his command with a roar that was as much irritation as battle cry.
Thankfully, the game couldn't tell the difference, and the skill went off without a hitch, a half-dozen cat-sized dragon whelps giving up their pursuit of True Bane and Dark Bane in favor of rushing Caden. The two players continued to sprint away at full speed, somehow utterly oblivious to the fact that their pursuers had found a new target. Caden did not doubt that the twin brothers had thought that moniker Bane made for a cool pseudonym, but he wondered just how many players now thought of it as a curse. They certainly felt like the Bane of his existence at the moment.
Little help?
He shouted as he shifted a step back into the side. It was a vain attempt to get both the whelps and their adult sibling into his forward arc, where he could hope to block their attacks. An effort made all the harder by Grasp the World locking him within a small area.
"On it!"
Shifty shouted from the other side of the blue and silver dragon. It was difficult to hear what he said next over the sudden roar of the dragon as the creature lashed out its tail in his direction, but the effect was obvious as 2 of the whelps fell away from the onrushing pack. Their feet were pinned to the floor as they thrashed and gave mewling roars of their own.
"Out of time!"
Celia finished. In the confusion of the battle, he hadn't even heard her start casting, but he wondered why he had ever doubted her help. 2 more of the whelps suddenly vanished without fanfare, save for a comical pop of air. It was Celia's crowd control spell, an ability that sent non-elite or boss enemies up to 30 seconds into the future. He'd still have to deal with all 6 eventually, but fighting them 2 at a time instead of 6 at once was a hell of a lot more manageable.
"Skill use! Shield bash!"
Caden yelled a moment after blocking Mecha's most recent lunge for his throat. The flat of his shield struck the metallic beast a solid blow just below the red visor that passed for its eyes. The force of the attack sent the monster stumbling away, its head shaking this way and that as it struggled to throw off the stun effect Caden had inflicted. The momentary reprieve gave Caden all the time he needed to deal with the remaining 2 whelps. By themselves, the small winged creatures were only tricky due to the erratic nature of their attack. The first pounced on him, managing to find purchase on 1 shoulder, but the other found only the tip of his sword, piercing its own frame in the wild attempt to strike at him. It let out a squeal of shock and pain, then went silent as Caden flicked his blade and finished bisecting the small creature. The one on his shoulder didn't go so quickly. The black and white lizard pecked, scratched, and bit Caden, staying 1 step away from the young man's grasping hand as it skittered from shoulder to shoulder, then settled in the middle of his back, raking claws over and over against his breastplate.
Trubane's Holy Smite hits you for 212 holy, dark resist impaired.
Really?
Caden cried incredulously. The whelp on his back had taken similar damage from the lightcaster's spell, but Caden couldn't help but think there must have been some way to do it that didn't involve scorching him with divine power.
Sorry,
the man replied awkwardly. Both brothers were 19, but neither had the maturity or self-confidence to match their age.
Just deal with the whelps!
Caden swung back into action, turning on the mechanical dragon and ducking behind his shield just as a ray of blue fire shot from its beak.
We've got this thing!
In truth, Caden was beginning to wonder if the brothers had done more harm than good. They'd contributed significantly to DPS on the boss, but their inability to follow instructions and stop throwing damage over time spells had triggered its second phase before Celia had managed to heal Caden back to full health. Their inability to just stand in one place had been what had inundated the party with whelps, and considering how deep he was into the yellow half of his HP bar, Caden wondered if their stupidity would be the death of him yet. Thankfully, the two brothers proved at least competent at the one thing he'd brought them along for, dealing damage. Alternating dark and holy spells provided the Banes with a steady source of damage, even if they did sometimes stumble over their words or incantations. The mixture of a Lightcaster and a Nightbringer made for a powerful combination, which had been part of why Caden had picked the pair in the first part. At the time, he'd thought they were clever for coming up with a strong build combination. Now he was reasonably sure that they'd picked it so they could pick cool names and an all-black and white color scheme to match. Either way, the pair of them made short work of the remaining whelps with a somewhat excessive barrage of spells. That left Caden, Celia, and Shifty able to focus on the real threat, their weapons clanking and shrieking off the chrome surfaces of the bipedal dragon as the beast gave ground before them. Mecha had solid stats, but by now its attacks were becoming predictable. It was actually a neat little Easter egg, a mechanical enemy with a robotic attack pattern. Claw, claw, bite. Swipe with the tail, bite, try a breath attack. They pounded on the dragon, laying strike after strike across its surface until, at last, it roared in final defiance. Caden and his comrades backed off from the creature, their weapons lowered. But the Banes continued to attack, launching spell after spell at the dragon as it fell back towards the silver and blue walls of the compound.
It's dead, Caden said with a roll of his eyes.
Doesn't look dead, the twins replied in unison.
Did you not even...
Caden started. Then a smirk caught the corner of his lips. A similar smile coming to the faces of Celia and Shifty as they made the same realization. The trio began to put distance between themselves and the dragon, slinking back to the edges of the room even as the brothers advanced on the dragon, throwing spell after spell.
Did we not what?
Asked Darkbane, before a rumble of laughter echoed from the towering dragon. Its metallic head lowered once again, its mouth opening with blue fire bubbling inside. But instead of the beams that it had thrown their way time after time, a small sprite of blue-white flame emerged, floating in slow, erratic patterns just above the dragon's mouth. Neither brother knew what to make of it, but Caden did. He stood on the sidelines, grinning and watching as the flame wiggled this way and that. It turned slowly, until it, at last, revealed a face inside the flame, a comical-looking visage consisting of a pair of black flames for eyes and an equally ridiculous black flame smile. The flame's expression didn't change, but it apparently caught sight of the ones who had defeated the dragon. It rushed towards them, and the brothers attempted to flee, albeit into one another. Their awkward crash sent them sprawling to the ground as the flame descended upon them, striking the top brother in the pile, Trubane, in the center of his back.
Gah!
The man cried, though it was more from surprise than pain. A second more and he was back on his feet, eyes twisting this way and that as he sought out the flame. The flame was gone, but in its place, there were new smiles. Caden, Celia, and Shifty all grinning ear to ear. His brother, on the other hand, was not grinning.
Ethan! Your face? What? What about my face?
The panic in Trubane's voice was as palpable as the shock on his brother's.
What happened? You're all scaly.
It was too much. Caden burst out laughing, followed soon by Shifty. Celia, to her credit, lasted the longest, doing her best to put on a mask of sympathy that slipped only as she watched Trubane run fingers along the green scales that had sprouted all across his skin.
What the hell?
Trubane shouted, whirling on Caden.
You knew about this?
So would you, if you'd bothered to read the prep work Celia gave you,
Caden said, through barely controlled laughter.
You think this is funny?
This time it was Darkbane venting his anger, the dark-haired young man on the verge of violence.
A little, yeah,
Caden admitted. Unperturbed by the vitriol coming from Darkbane, he gestured to the man's reptilian twin.
Check your debuffs.
There was a short pause as the young man navigated through menus on a pair of antiquated AR glasses. Then he nodded grimly.
The dragon's curse. It's okay, Eric. It is temporary and cosmetic. A couple of hours and I'll be back to normal.
Which, again, you'd have known if you had spent 5 minutes reading,
Celia chimed in irritably.
Or if you'd played any classic games at all.
Hey, we skimmed it for the important parts, okay?
Trubane frowned, unnerved by the sudden amount of hiss in his words. Shifty was not amused.
You skimmed it? Did you consider skimming the part about avoiding the whelp caves when Mecha knocks down the far wall?
Everyone is alive. What do you care?
Darkbane shot back.
No thanks to you.
Shifty. Caden said the name softly but firmly. Outside of shot calling in combat, he didn't like to give orders in their party. The mutual respect was part of what made their dynamic work so well. But from time to time, Caden had to put his foot down, even if it was awkward to chide a man twice his age.
We made it through, which is what matters. If they want to get themselves killed going forward, that is their business. Let's check the loot and get going.
The brothers continued to protest, eager to continue the argument. To his credit, however, Shifty turned away from the pair in disgust, following Caden to the fallen, sparking corpse of the Mecha Dragon.
Why hasn't it despawned?
Celia asked. Caden shrugged.
Floor bosses all die in different ways. Some will ash away after a while. Others, like this guy, just sort of lay here until reset. Seems like it's just rule of cool from the developer.
Okay, but where is the drop then?
The blonde persisted, creeping up on the destroyed machine just a few steps behind Caden.
Chest cavity,
he replied, casting a slightly annoyed glance back over his shoulder. It made sense for the party healer to spend most of her time behind the tank, but over the last week, it had started to irk him just how often she spent peeking just over his shoulder.
Now who didn't read up on the details?
I've got it pinned if it mattered.
Celia stuck out her tongue, the undignified act making the 16-year-old Chrono Magi seem even more her age.
I am certain, Caden replied, dubiously as he clambered up onto Mecha's fallen frame.
It felt weird to stand on the fallen robot, in large part because this wasn't the first time he'd beaten it. When he was 7, his mom had brought out an old cardboard box containing a host of dusty electronics. A Super Nintendo, an original PlayStation, and her favorite, the Sega Master System, her mother had bought her as a child. His mom had insisted he try out some of those old classics, and the time spent rampaging through games like Metroid, Zillion, Kung Fu, and, ironically, even Rampage, were among his fondest childhood memories. One game that had always stuck with him, however, was The Dragon's Trap, an old Sega adventure game that began with a fight against the very dragon upon which he was now standing. To say the experience was surreal was an understatement. Caden didn't understand how anyone could think the developer was anything other than human. Who else could mimic gamer culture in so many ways? Who else would be crazy enough to use reality warping power to make the tower in the first place? For Caden, the question was never if he was human, just what on earth he was thinking.
What on earth are you thinking?
Huh? Caden jumped, startled out of his musings by Celia's playful tones.
You're just staring at the thing. It's creepy.
You're creepy, he shot back ineffectually before clambering over the metal husk of the defeated dragon. Mecha's chest activity was easily accessed, the two plates over its heart having loosened during its death throes. They pulled apart quickly, revealing a mass of wires, circuitry, heat sinks, and other technical components. In the center, shielded behind a second protective barrier, he found the crystal, housed within a cowling of orange and gray metal.
"This loot will light our darkest hour," Caden said, rolling his eyes.
The phrase had appeared on his AR glasses the moment he'd removed the assembly from its housing. Only once the words were spoken could he pull on either end of the casing, drawing it apart as the crystal began to shine with an incredible light that was dimmed only by the sudden appearance of an item window on his display.
Wonderplate, rare. And now, proceed with your adventurous undertaking. Defense, 250. Required level, 20. Required strength, 24. Durability, 30 out of 30. Bonus resist damage, 10. All except holy. Immunity to all polymorph or petrification attacks, not again. Special, impeccable shininess.
Everyone else was similarly looking at their AR displays, or in Shifty's case, their screens, when Caden looked up. Owing to the two pubbies in the group, Caden had decided to set the loot system for the boss encounter as personal. This reduced the overall amount of loot the boss would drop, but guaranteed that each party member had a chance to receive at least one piece of loot tailored to their specific build. Considering all difficulty the Banes had put them through, it seemed prudent. Shifty was as hard to read as ever, but whatever she got, Celia was overjoyed. The petite girl was hopping foot to foot in her light blue linen robe, her hands balled into fists as she shimmied this way and that. Undignified, but considering Caden had done the same thing on more than one occasion, he wasn't about to point fingers.
"So, what's next?"
Trubane asked, his lizard tongue struggling with each and every syllable.
"Next?"
Caden asked with an upraised eyebrow. He walked to the edge of Mecha, hopped to the ground, and snapped his fingers to gain access to his full menu. A few seconds of silence followed, then the face of each brother tightened as a message appeared on their display.
Caden has kicked you from the party.
"Does that sum it up enough for you?"
Caden asked with a sickeningly sweet grin.
"In case you missed it on the rundown you didn't read, the stairs are right there. They lead directly into the middle of Terabeth, the floor capital, so you can't even accuse me of putting you at risk getting to town. Have a good night, boys."
The two men exchanged looks, an unspoken communication passing between them before a different sort of nonverbal message was passed in Caden's direction. He was only too happy to return it, keeping his hand extended in their direction long after they'd turned their backs on him and headed for the stairs. It was only once they were finally out of earshot that Celia's soft giggle broke the tension in the room.
"What a bunch of—"
she started, clearly intending to drop a particularly unpleasant name before she shook her head and thought better of it.
"I thought they'd never leave."
"You're telling me,"
Caden remarked dryly. He began to intone a mixture of English and runic words, canceling the series of buff spells he had placed on his person to diminish his MP to the point that the twins wouldn't have any questions about why the tank had such high MP. At the same time, he toggled an option in his menu, removing the blocks that he'd put in place, blocks that concealed his rune magi class levels and abilities.
"Any runes worth having?"
Shifty remarked, making his way alongside the pair with a whetstone in one hand and one of his throwing knives in the other.
Let me check. Skill use. Find rune, Caden said.
His AR display dimmed, all his usual pinned information and statistics falling away to provide no distraction as he turned and surveyed the room. Find rune was the level 8 power from Rune Magi, and perhaps the most useful of the bunch. It highlighted any and all runes within roughly 250 feet of him on his display, even through walls or other obstacles. It was useful, of course, for expanding his vocabulary, but it had proven equally helpful in finding a couple of totally undiscovered secret rooms during the course of their adventures.
Nothing,
he said at last, disabling the skill. He hadn't expected to find much. The walls of the floor 10 dungeons looked like blue-painted silicon boards, covered in all manner of gold-traced circuitry, but little else. If there were any runes to be found in the entire complex, they would have been found here.
Can you stop doing that, though?
Doing what? Shifty asked.
Sharpening knives next to me? Sounds like hell and makes me think you're going to stab me.
Wouldn't be the first time.
The middle-aged thief grinned, the dark leather of his armor creaking around his slightly oversized midsection as he brought himself upright.
Which we still need to talk about.
Celia joined Shifty with a smug expression of her own. The two had swapped stories during the weeks he'd been gone, and the fact that Caden and Shifty had first met in combat had been chief among them. He'd lied to her by omission, and she wasn't likely to let him live that down.
Get right up next to his ear with it.
I'd rather you not, Caden groaned. Why are you doing that now anyway? We're done for the day. Going straight to town.
Forearmed is forearmed, Shifty shrugged.
Caden cocked an eyebrow.
I'm almost entirely certain that isn't how the expression goes.
Potato, potato,
Shifty replied without the slightest difference in the pronunciation of the two words.
I am entirely certain that isn't how that goes, Caden frowned, looking to Celia for help. Celia, could you please—
His words came up short at the point of one of the girl's upraised fingers. Her other hand was just behind her ear, covering it slightly as she listened to some audio being broadcast by her glasses. All three stood in silence as she listened, both Caden and Shifty watching as blood drained from Celia's face.
What happened?
Shifty was the first to ask as the hand came away from her ear.
A joint CFC raid went completely wrong. Don't have all the details, but there was apparently some big infighting afterward.
Celia replied with a soft frown.
Silver died.
Chapter 2
Wench, bring some drinks for my friends!
Silver bellowed, slamming her fist down onto the tabletop. Sarah cocked a carefully shaped blue eyebrow at the command. She was doing her best not to laugh, but there was no mistaking the humor dancing around in bright emerald eyes as she looked from Silver to Caden and then to Celia.
I don't think so.
Wench, bring some juice for my friends?
You really think it is the type of drink I was having a problem with?
Sarah asked with a wry smile. Silver sighed and rolled her eyes.
You're no fun. Sarah, could we please get them some drinks?
Milk for the kids,
she said, ignoring Celia and Caden's shouts of protest.
Rum for Shifty, of course. And for you, my elegant lady.
Are Green Russians actually a thing?
Silver asked drearily.
Not a good thing.
Sarah laughed before, at last, looking to Caden and asking the obvious.
She's been here for an hour and still won't tell me. What happened?
She died,
Caden replied before Silver could shush him.
Ugh,
Silver confirmed, setting her head down on the table, a puddle of onyx hair concealing her from view.
Oh, sweetheart,
Sarah cried, bustling around the table to force a hug on the slumped-over woman before Silver could realize what was coming.
What happened?
I don't want to talk about it,
the young woman mumbled into the tabletop.
I'm sorry. I didn't catch that.
I don't want to talk about it, she shouted, sitting abruptly upright and nearly throwing Sarah to the ground in the process.
Half the bustling tavern was staring at the outburst, Elon and humans both rubbernecking to see what all the drama was about.
I don't want to talk about it, and I don't want to think about it. I want a glass filled with wine, which remains filled with wine until I'm ready to go to bed.
You know, I think we have one of those,
came a remark from nearby Simbal, the silver-haired owner of the Inn of the Dizzy Sheep. If Silver's sudden outburst hadn't bothered her, Sarah didn't let it show. That welcoming, perpetual smile remained plastered across her face, and a hand stayed on Silver's shoulder as she asked the next question on her mind.
Okay, okay, I won't ask. Was just surprised. Not like you to show up out of the blue.
I invited her,
Celia spoke up.
More like browbeat me into it, Silver muttered.
More like invited you,
Celia persisted.
You're not going to do yourself any good pouting in your quarters at the Guildhall.
Yes, because I'll do so much better getting day drunk here for a month while you are out adventuring, Silver grumbled.
And hang out with us every evening when we get back,
Celia retorted, intentionally ignoring the negative part of her one-time bodyguard's comment. The Inn of the Dizzy Sheep had become a regular haunt for their little band over the last few weeks. Good food, warm beds, and pleasant company. It was an ideal resting spot, even if the cost to teleport there each evening and back each morning dug a small pit into their available funds. In Babel, it was hard to put value on a place you could call home.
Oh, goody,
Silver said dryly. Shifty looked up from his fiddling with a bit of leather working.
If you didn't want our company, you'd have stayed in your room.
Quiet, you, she retorted quickly. Don't try and bring logic into this.
A ripple of laughter rolled around the table before Caden spoke.
If you don't want to talk about it, that is fine. But what do you mean, a month?
Silver's eyebrows knitted together in confusion for a moment, before at last the comment fell into place.
Oh, the death timer, she nodded. Downside of using a green dream. If it activates to save your life, the death penalty is a month instead of 7 days.
Ouch, Caden winced.
Well, small blessing, but I doubt they're going to go anywhere without you.
Silver snorted at that.
Flattery will get you places, mister. Though truth be told, I'm starting to wonder if we're ever going to get anywhere, with or without me.
It's that bad?
Celia asked softly.
Honestly?
It's worse,
Silver frowned.
Not to piss off your sister by being the grim voice of reason in the room, but we still haven't seen the demon's third stage. I don't think we're even close.
A somber moment passed over the assembled players as her words, depressing as they were, sunk in. The progression guilds had been hammering away on Sobald's demon for nearly half a year, and Silver didn't even think they were close? On the one hand, it bolstered Caden's confidence that he'd be able to catch up to the leading guilds before the game was over. On the other hand, was he rushing all this way just to smack headlong into the same unbreakable wall?
Okay, I need a...
Silver started, only to be pleasantly surprised by the arrival of a glass of rich red wine.
You are too good for this floor, Simbal. Your talents are wasted here.
So true. Though perhaps I wouldn't be working so hard if some of my employees...
She fixed Sarah with a stare as she spoke.
Worked rather than gossiped.
Right. Rum, milk, and some food. I'll be back right away.
Sarah stammered, bustling off in a hurry, as much as to escape that withering stare as to fill the order. Silver smiled at Simbal, then waited for the older woman to leave earshot before turning her attention to the three low-level players.
Speaking of progress, how goes that grand quest of yours?
Caden sighed. He knew Silver would ask the question. How could she not? It had just come earlier than he would have liked. A glance at the upper left-hand corner of his display told him everything he needed to know, two pinned reminders of quests still unfinished sitting there, taunting him.
Special quest. Learning to run. Requirements. Locate the entrance to the throne of Tabriz. Reward, 35,000 XP. Grand Quest. Find her. Requirements. Locate and free the White Knight. Reward. Question mark.
Speaking of lack of progress, you mean? Caden shrugged, his voice low. He doubted anyone outside of the ring of their table could hear a word they were saying over the clattering din of the inn, but he still didn't like discussing the quest in public.
I'm looking for a location, but I can't find a single reference to it online or in any library I visited.
Caden left out the fact that he was banned from the one library he thought would be most likely to contain the information that he needed.
You know, the CFC offer to help does still stand, Silver hinted.
And if I completely run out of ideas, you will be the first ones I come to, Caden replied as diplomatically as he was able.
Luxuria, on behalf of her guild, Thermonuclear Box, and the broader guild of guilds known as the Coalition for Completion, had been making the same sort of offer through a variety of intermediaries on a near-daily basis. He couldn't blame either of them, particularly in light of Silver's new bluntness, but it was an offer he was getting tired of refusing. It felt too much like cheating, and even if it hadn't, their help would put him in the crosshairs of their competitors, somewhere he desperately did not want to be.
Suit yourself. Just try not to get yourself or Celia killed in the process.
Silver shrugged, turning her full attention to the long-stemmed wine glass that Simbal had so graciously provided.
What about me? Shifty chimed in from across the table.
Hmm? What about you?
Silver replied to a gale of laughter. The mage played nonchalant on the issue of his grand quest, but he was reasonably sure that Silver was chomping just as heavily on the bit, if not more so, than her guild leader. Silver had dedicated over 2 years of her life to this game, time spent almost entirely on the bleeding edge of progress, only to get stuck at the halfway mark. That alone would be maddening. But to have to watch Caden bumble around with a grand quest that might give her the edge she needed to progress, fearing that he might screw it up or fail or get himself killed? If their roles were reversed, he probably would have strangled her by now. Shifty and Silver continued to throw shade and ice-cold burns at one another as Caden's attention drifted from the inn to his display. There were a few new messages demanding his attention, a letter from Sarah sent earlier in the day, a text message from his father reminding him of his mother's upcoming birthday, and the usual handful of messages from fans asking if and when he was going to start streaming again. The last one made him wince. His past live stream had been over a month earlier, back when Immolatus had first put a bounty on his head, and since then he'd done almost nothing regarding content for his channel. First the bounty, then Rune Magi. There were just too many things he had to keep close to the chest to be able to stream. Idiots like the Banes might have missed the obvious if they even bothered to look at his class levels, but among an audience of thousands, most of them were going to notice that he was level 20, but only had 10 listed class levels. Which reminded him. Caden closed out of his message menu and entered his character information screen. He was immediately assaulted by the cheery victory music and glittering light show that accompanied the shining red Level Up button displayed prominently on the left side of his screen. Killing Mecca had put him just over the top, but in the bustle of Celia's overly dramatic pronouncement, it had slipped his mind to go and level up. As usual, he was presented with an enormous list of possible classes and, as normal, Caden already knew what he was going to select. He'd topped off on Rune Magi 3 levels ago, and then switched right back to his original Guardian progression. Rune Magi had changed his long-term goals for how he planned to build his character, primarily by forcing him to take levels and classes that had good energy MP ratios, but in the short term, his focus was still on improving his primary role as a tank.
You have reached Guardian level 10, plus 40 HP, plus 20 TP. New skill learned. Cover. Type. Active combat skill. Skill level. Novice level 1. Effect. Increase movement speed towards targeted ally by 300%. While in effect, Attacks that would normally be made against targeted ally are made against you instead. All attacks intercepted in this fashion have their damage reduced by 25%. Duration, 10 seconds. Cooldown, 1 minute. Cost, 200 TP.
Caden laughed slightly at the skill, drawing a curious look from the companions at his table before he gestured to his glasses by way of explanation. Cover was most well known as a someone-screwed-up ability, so of course he unlocked it after he was finished dealing with the brothers and their constant mistakes. Despite its reputation, Caden viewed cover as more of a sustainability tool than one of desperation. With a good party, he could juggle monster aggro to allow him to use cover whenever the ability was off cooldown, treating it as a combination of movement ability, a taunt, and a damage reduction skill. Cover could be even better if he invested his new point of mastery into it, but that would have to come later. Still mainly ignoring the banter of his friends, Caden distributed his stat points in the usual manner for a level in Guardian and took a brief glance at his character sheet.
Name, Caden. Gender, male. Bloodline, Ajeri's Tabriz. Class, Guardian 10, Rune Magi 10. Experience, 190,697. Next level, 211,000. Strength, 21. Dexterity, 33. Vitality, 34. Energy, 51. Stat points remaining, 0. Mastery points remaining, 1. Max HP, 2,260. HP recovery, 6.8 per second. Max MP, 3,410. MP recovery, 10.2 per second. Max TP, 1,620. TP recovery, 8.8 per second.
Not half bad, all things considered. From there, he navigated to his skill menu. His list of abilities was becoming expansive, but for the moment, he focused his attention on the skills that might make good candidates for mastery. Grasp the World was out, for obvious reasons. Runic Overload was too situational and costly to use often, while its sister skill, Runic Empowerment, wasn't strong enough to deserve it. Taunt, Shield Bash, Southern Cross, all had their merits. But his attention was primarily focused on his newest skills.
Revenge. Type. Passive, active, combat skill. Skill level. Novice level 3. Passive effect. When skill is not on cooldown, increase damage dealt by 5% of all damage received within previous 10 seconds. Effect. Strike foe for main hand weapon damage plus 53% of all damage received during previous 5 seconds. Cooldown. 45 seconds. Cost. 250 TP. Find rune. Type. Active skill. Skill level. Novice level 4. Effect. Highlights any unknown runes within 265 feet. Cost. 1000 MP. Ritual casting. Type. Active skill. Skill level. Novice. Effect. The user is capable of crafting more complex and time-consuming ritual spells. Duration. Variable. Cooldown. Variable. Cost. Variable.
All three made for very tempting options when it came to his mastery point. Revenge would upgrade into Justice, healing him a large amount of the bonus damage dealt on hit, which could add a lot to his tanking in tough fights. He'd heard of at least two prominent Guardian players who swore by the skill, and it was on his mastery list one way or the other. The other two were more problematic. The skill menu didn't show Caden what a skill would upgrade into if he invested his mastery points. It only told him if the skill was available to be upgraded. For skills like Revenge, this wasn't a problem. They were well known and easy to research. The other two, however? Caden hadn't had much time to play around with ritual casting in the weeks since he'd unlocked the ability, but from what he could see, it appeared to be identical to the ability that most focused caster types got around level 20. As far as direct one-on-one combat, it was next to worthless. There were high-level battlefield magics, but unfortunately, almost all such magics required multiple participants, and as of yet, Caden had been unable to find enough willing casters to learn if arcane or divine spellcasting could contribute to his ritual spells or vice versa. Out of combat, there was a host of possible uses for ritual spells that he could cast all by himself. From alarm magic intended to wake them if someone approached their camp, to divination magic to spy on a distant location, or to ward against specific dangers they might expect, such as petrification. Ritual casting could prove an invaluable resource in the future. Even more so if he mastered it to allow for even more complex rituals. Useful in the future, but he needed a larger vocabulary and some testing to make the most of it. Which brought him to the final option. Find Rune. So far, the skill had proven to be nothing short of outstanding. The ability to know the location of nearby runes had vastly improved the number of words in his lexicon, which in turn increased the usefulness of the ability overall. He still had quite a distance to go to the next cutoff point at 2,000 words, but the boost in strength he'd obtain when he got there would be nothing short of incredible. The problem was that he didn't know what would happen if he upgraded Find Rune. Babel included a decent number of other Find-type skills, but the difference between mastering them was often significant and didn't translate well to Find Rune. Upgrading the ability could do anything from increasing his range to making it an always-on passive to translating unknown runes directly. He just couldn't tell, and that uncertainty was the only thing that gave him pause. Caden liked to think of himself as a gambler, a risk-taker. But part of that identity was tied up in the knowledge that he always had an idea of the odds before he did whatever stupid thing that came to mind, even if the odds were poor. With Find Runes, he had no idea. He might end up kicking himself in the backside later, but with two taps of his finger on empty air, Caden confirmed the choice for his new mastery. Justice. Type. Passive, active combat skill. Skill level. Mastered. Novice capped. Passive effect. When skill is not on cooldown, increased damage dealt by 5% of all damage received within previous 10 seconds. Effect. Strike foe for main hand weapon damage plus 60% of all damage received during previous 5 seconds. User heals for 60% of all damage received during previous 5 seconds. Cooldown, 60 seconds. Cost, 300 TP.
What if you get it, Caden?
The use of his name startled Caden out of his electronic trance, dragging him back to reality where the table of his friends were all staring at him intently. He returned their gazes, nudging his glasses just far enough down the bridge of his nose that he could see them all without the swarm of menus obscuring their faces.
I have no idea what you were asked, Shifty finished helpfully with an entirely too smug grin.
Don't worry. She should know better than to ask anyway, Silver said sternly over the lip of her wine glass. I don't see the problem. We're all here for the same thing, aren't we?
Celia asked.
I'm here because it pays better than roofing, Shifty retorted dryly.
The fact that you don't see a problem doesn't mean it isn't a custom, Silver continued. It's no different from the way we ditch our arms and armor when we get back to town. You just don't ask.
Okay, I'm officially confused, Caden said in the hesitation between Celia shooting back at Silver. She wants to know what you'd wish for if you got the chance, Shifty chimed in while the two women spoke over one another in an attempt to express the same idea.
Caden nodded, a slight hint of surprise crossing his features. It was a well-respected, if unwritten, rule amongst most progression players not to ask what their competitors might wish for if given a chance. He wasn't sure where or how it had started, though there were a number of theories ranging from an attempt to cut down on interplayer violence to a superstition based on a number of early player deaths. Whatever the reason, Caden honestly hadn't ever given the rule much thought. It was arrogant of him, but who cared what other players planned to wish for if he intended to be the first one there?
It's okay, though to be honest, you'd be disappointed with my answer.
Oh?
Celia perked up.
What is it?
Just drop it,
Silver warned, her tone growing more unpleasant by the moment. Caden hesitated, but a part of him balked at being ordered around.
That's just it. I don't know.
Celia raised an eyebrow at that, apparently surprised, but it was Silver that spoke, her voice icy.
You don't know?
Caden shrugged.
Not really. I never gave it much thought. Figured I'd just decide in the moment.
Oh my god, Caden, that is how
Are you serious?
Silver cut into Celia's words, her wine set down as the dark-haired woman leaned angrily over the table.
You're going to decide in the moment? Honestly, Caden, is there anything you don't half-ass?
Silver!
Celia snapped sharply.
Caden didn't mean...
Oh, you didn't mean that to be insulting?
The older woman shot back at both of them. Her eyes narrowed as she talked over Celia's more uncertain voice.
Well, mission failed.
All three of the table's other occupants exchanged looks with one another in the silence that had followed Silver's outburst. For her part, the mage drowned whatever further words she had roiling on the tip of her tongue beneath another swallow from the apparently bottomless wine glass.
Silver?
Caden was more shocked than angry. The emotion reflected as much by his lack of words as his tone. Somehow, that discomfort dug even deeper into whatever wound he had poked on Silver, the woman snapping back before she could help herself.
This really is just a game to you, isn't it, Caden?
Caden opened his mouth to state the obvious, that it was a game, but closed it just as quickly as Silver bit into him again.
Do you have any idea how many friends...
She started, losing her train of thought almost immediately as she pounded her right arm down on the table with a heavy thud.
Do you have any idea what the cost of your little adventure is? Do you even care?
That is enough,
Celia tried to interject. Silver certainly didn't think it was, but Celia provided a new target for her wrath all the same.
Is it? Maybe if Lux bothered to talk to you at all, you'd have some inkling of an idea. You do know why they call me Silver, don't you?
Okay, maybe bottomless wine is not in your best interest tonight,
Simbal interjected sternly, summoned by the sudden vitriol being spewed at what was usually a quiet table. The snow-haired tavern owner snatched the offending wine glass from Silver. Seeing her libations in danger, Silver abandoned the argument in favor of one with Simbal, then stopped short as something about the older woman gave her pause.
I don't want to have to cut you off, but you're acting...
Simbal trailed off as she realized that it wasn't just Silver staring at her. Every person sitting at the table was eyeing her with a mix of concern and wonder.
What? Do I have something on my face?
The last word was left unspoken, as Simbal and nearly half the tavern's other occupants shimmered, then burst into motes of bright, multicolored light. Chapter 3 The immediate aftermath of the light show was chaos. Players leaped from their tables, swiping at screens or invisible displays to arm themselves against whatever threat had struck the occupants of the Dizzy Sheep. The Elon occupants almost universally bolted, or in some cases, stumbled, for the doors, wisely deciding they didn't want to be a part of whatever came next. The tension was everywhere in the room as individual pockets of players faced off with one another, scanning the room with a range of detection abilities, with their weapons at the ready for a follow-up attack. Eventually, it became clear that there would be no second wave. Whatever had happened, had happened. Fear gave way to confusion and uncertainty as players once again took to their digital devices in search of answers.
She's alive!
Sarah shouted with relief.
She's still on my friends list, so she... Wait. Why is she on the first floor?
Sarah tapped away at the mirror display in her hand, the tower's equivalent of a modern smartphone, albeit far more advanced than anything humanity had been able to develop on their own. Caden could see her furiously writing her way through a message, then stabbing at the send button over and over in frustration as the device failed to respond.
I can't message